This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Hello, I'm Robin Ince.
And I'm Brian Cox, and we would like to tell you about the new series of The Infinite Monkey Cage. We're going to have a planet off.
Jupiter versus Saturn!
It was very well done, that, because in the script it does say wrestling voice.
After all of that, it's going to kind of chill out a bit and talk about ice.
And also in this series we're discussing history of music, recording with Brian Eno, and looking at nature's shapes.
So, listen wherever you get your podcasts.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. Today on the Moneybox Live podcast, we're talking about the financial impact of having a disability. Because life can be much more expensive. Heating and energy bills can be higher, and transport can be harder.
What should be a sort of £4 or £5 tube journey is then a £30 taxi journey across London.
Research from the charity Scope suggests that disabled households have to find an extra £1,000 a month just to have the same standard of living as non-disabled households. It also means navigating benefits. And this morning, the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, said she will deliver fundamental reform to the welfare system with a focus on the rising cost of health and disability benefits. Before we meet today's panel, let's hear from Charlie, who became paralysed in his 20s while serving in the British Army.
When I was about 25, I was injured at work whilst I was serving in the military, and I had an injury on training, which left me paralysed below the waist. And so I found myself kind of lying in a hospital bed at the age of 25 going, what is going to happen to my life and my relationships and my career? And it was this kind of overwhelming feeling of sort of slight of loss, and not so much loss in terms of like my physical loss, like that, but I kind of felt okay in terms of working to make it better. But in terms of like this sort of security and feeling of groundedness beneath me, because like my dreams and hopes for life had been changed so massively. And so I had all of that going along before I started getting into the practical stuff.
When did you start thinking about that practical stuff? When did you start thinking about the kind of financial impact this would have on you?
I was lying in a hospital bed in Salisbury. I remember kind of hearing about disability living allowance and kind of going, okay, it's a government benefit that could help provide me with a bit of extra cash for the challenges that I'm likely to have as a wheelchair user, as I was at the time. And I was starting to use crutches and in terms of needing to use taxis more and stuff like that. And I was sort of like, okay, that's great. But then the form was massive. And it's like, I can't remember what it was back then, like 20, 30 pages. With all of these different questions and all of these different sort of terminology about asking about how is your life affecting you in all of these ways. And suddenly you've got to go from this point of complete unawareness of a whole part of how our society functions to almost having to be an expert immediately to accurately describe these challenges and the financial implications of them. It's kind of scary, and I felt quite lost in that process.
What kind of support network did you have?
The support structure that I had in place in terms of the kind of benefit system and sorting out my finances, it felt very limited for me at that time. But that is partly because of like my character, and I like to try and solve things myself. And because I was still serving when I was in hospital being treated, and I carried on serving for another 3 years after my injury. But they were really, really supportive in terms of sending me on to additional recovery places, and then they allowed me to carry on working for them for another 3 years. So they helped me go and do an educational course, so I got a master's to help me prepare for leaving the military, and they wanted to help that sort of transition to a non-military person, and that helped my mental well-being. I think that would have been worse off if I had lost my job.
Your situation might be a bit different to other people's because you have that military background. There's a military pension. They've helped with some costs. What are some of the unexpected costs that you had because of your injury, because of your disability?
Crutches, and I use a wheelchair. It's those bits of equipment for me are the biggest one. For so many other bits as well, it's like it's using taxis. What should be a sort of £4 or £5 tube journey is then a £30 taxi journey across London. And another big cost for me is that my lower legs are completely paralysed. And so I don't have the blood flow flowing around them like it does on non-disabled people's bodies. So then when I'm at home, I have the heating on more than most people would, because otherwise my lower legs just kind of turn into ice blocks and it takes them a long time to warm up. I have to go back, get back into bed and snuggle up or go and have a bath really to warm them up once they've lost that heat. So yeah, so additional heating on the house. So I find myself sometimes having to be more cautious in situations than I would have been pre-injury. And that has a sort of negative effect in other ways in terms of, say, I wanted to go and undertake a certain type of employment. I would have concerns about like really stressful jobs, because when I get really stressed, that stress comes out in terms of bladder incontinence or bowel incontinence. And then I find myself like in a workplace and I'm kind of like peeing my trousers before a really big meeting where there's like hundreds of people. And so then I kind of go, I don't want to have a role and a job where I'm doing that. And then I'm suddenly removing myself from a part of the workplace. And so then because of my disability, I'm kind of dropping myself down a peg or two. Yeah, and that feels sad. It's a broader aspect of financial rather than just a day-to-day direct cost. A lot of these discussions is always like, how many extra taxis do you take each year? But then when you try and explain these much sort of disparate aspects, particularly on a claim form for like disability living allowance, they can't really consider all those much, much broader things in that way.
Charlie, thank you so much for sharing your experiences. Well, listening to that are today's expert panel. I'm delighted to be joined by Dan White, Campaigns and Policy Officer for Disability Rights UK, which works to represent disabled people in the UK, and also Sarah Colt, Head of Personal Finance at the investment platform Hargreaves Lansdown. Hello.
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 Thanks both for being with us. Dan, there's lots to talk to you about, because I know you live with a disability yourself. You also care for your daughter, who's a wheelchair user.
Yes.
Before all that, I just want to reflect on what we heard there from Charlie. First of all, what is disability living allowance and how do you apply?
Well, with many other benefits you claim, like disability allowance or PIP or things like that, they are essentially there to help give you, well, essentially help extra finance towards the daily costs of your life. But as we know, as we heard through the research through Scope, that barely scratches the surface. And through the wonderful gentleman you had on now, barely scratches the surface, because obviously there's so much more additional finance you need when it becomes living with a disability, whether it be heating, whether it be energy, whether it be transport. So that there's so much more that could be given to people to support them. But DLA and PIP are out there along with many other benefits that people can claim.
PIP, of course, personal independence payment, which we will talk about later on in the programme. But briefly, how do you claim disability living allowance? How do you apply?
Basically, go to gov.uk. They have a fantastic resource there on all the benefits you can claim if you live with a disability or even if you are a carer. It's laid out in very, very good terms of what you can apply for and the stipulations you need to apply for said things. There are also other good areas of support. Disability Rights UK and also Turn to Us, which are a national charity. We can provide practical help to people in order to fill in those forms. So there is, apart from the government website, there are many other places out there to literally assist you, because it can be very daunting.
Mm, good to know you can get some help with filling out the forms. Sarah, Charlie talked about some of the extra costs, and he was also very open about things like not applying for certain promotions because of his disability. Those are the kind of costs you probably can't measure.
Yes, absolutely. And we do a piece of research, so the HR Savings and Resilience Barometer, and we kind of look at all these different aspects of life and the difference between sort of people who have disabilities and those who don't. So we know, for example, that average income is actually 40% below the average for people who have disability. We know that fewer than half have enough emergency savings, less than a third are on track with their pension, and on average, they have £37 left at the end of the month. So it's kind of a horrible combination of less coming in and more going out in order to cover those extra costs.
Now, just picturing Charlie lying in his hospital bed, Sarah, grappling with this massive change to his life. There will be people in similar situations today. What are some of the immediate things they can do to get financial support as quickly as possible?
Well, I think one of the first things to do is to sort of get any help that you can. So it's worth talking to your employer, because if you're still employed, and you will probably, you know, most likely you'll still be getting sick pay. You may also be able to talk to them about, you know, future work opportunities with them. But if you're sort of looking for immediate sort of income issues, then there are some, you know, obviously it takes a while to get benefits, not just to apply, but to go through the whole process of claiming. So there are some short-term bits of help. So your council can offer support in emergencies, so speak to them. And also charities. So particularly, there will be charities supporting people in your circumstances, and they can be incredible at a time like this, not just with providing finance, but also with help and advice about what you should do.
Yes, it's not just finance, it's knowing what you can apply for is so incredibly important. Right, let's talk a bit more about benefits. As I said, just this morning, the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has warned that reforms to disability benefits will be announced this spring. Ruth has been in touch, and her health declined after she was ill with COVID.
I ended up with long COVID, which left me with all sorts of issues. It's affected my arthritis, all sorts of things in my body. I've now been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which adds more to my pain and inability to function properly. Yeah, I can't work and I've had to claim benefits. I get ESA, Employment Support Allowance, but I've also claimed PIP. I had to really fight for PIP. I can't go out on my own. I have issues with my mobility and I've had some falls, so it helps if I need to go to an appointment or just to go and visit my mum or something, I have to go by taxi. But it also helps with just daily living. If they were reduced, that would really affect my quality of life. We wouldn't be able to pay our rent because we rent a house. So we'd probably end up like one of the loads of families that are now homeless. And also I don't see why they shouldn't be cutting things for things that people need.
Ruth, thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. Sarah, Ruth is clearly worried about what might happen. The Department for Work and Pensions has said the current benefits system needs to reform so that it's fairer on the taxpayer and so people who can work get the support they need to move into employment. Do we have any more detail yet on what might actually change?
So we don't have any details as yet. I think the really big concern is that we know with sort of, you know, public finances under lots of pressure, it's unlikely to get more generous. So I think that's the big fear at the moment. It does, I mean, we are quite likely to hear something ahead of the spring statement. So that's the 26th of March. So we should get more details over the coming weeks.
One for your diaries, 26th of March. Dan, for Ruth then, it was a struggle to get PIP. You've touched a little bit on personal independence payment already, but can you just explain what it is, what it's for and who qualifies?
Well, it can depend on the severity of your disability, how much money you can actually claim through PIP. So it's always worth checking out, as I said, the gov.uk website and other online companies to actually help you out. But essentially, it's a disability living allowance. It's a pot of money that's given to you, to essentially given to you in the premise that you can spend it how you will to improve your financial situation from day to day. It does depend, like I said, on the severity of the disability. It could be higher or it could be lower. And we know it's one of the things that the Chancellor is actually looking to review at the minute. So we're remaining cautious of it. We understand, of course, that the benefit system does need to be reviewed, but we want to make sure that the support for those who need it is absolutely ring-fenced solidly.
Okay, well, we've also had an email from Rachel who says, we have a young disabled adult living at home, autistic and with ADHD as well as other mental health issues. This young person is unable to work or take part in education. And Rachel says, we've applied for PIP and been turned down. We appealed and again were turned down. Dan, what can you do if you apply and you're unsuccessful or if you're not happy with the amount? How can you appeal?
You can appeal. You can go back to them again. You can also reach out to Citizens Advice, who have done fantastic work in this area. There's also an incredible company called the Disability Law Service, which you can get in contact with, which can guide you and assist you as well. Like I said, I will emphasise, turn to us, who have been fantastic, a national charity providing practical help for people who are struggling financially. There is plenty people can do, but unfortunately, it requires effort. And when you're the parent carer of a disabled child, as I know personally, that effort can only stretch so far when the system is supposed to be there to help you.
It's interesting as well, actually, we had an email from Turn to Us pointing out that they've launched a specific PIP helper. So guidance available there if you want it. The DWP told us we are committed to introducing a fully online claim service for PIP with trials currently ongoing to improve the application process experience. Dan, what other support can people apply for? What other help might be out there?
Specifically, if you're looking for things that are based not purely on benefits, obviously energy comes into it, because obviously this time of year, disabled people we find are really struggling to pay their energy bills. So there's things called the priority services register, which many energy suppliers have, which can give you support in paying your energy bills. Scope themselves do a disability energy support hotline, which you can get in contact with. But also we find a lot of disabled people are living in inadequate housing and are struggling to make that housing more accessible for themselves, so they can apply for a disabled facilities grant from local councils, which can give them up to £30,000 for home adaptations. And there's also something that's not very really talked about, which is called the Household Support Fund, which is from your local council as well. This can give you help if you're struggling to afford things like energy and water bills, food or essential items, and they may even offer vouchers to families during the school holidays. So there is support, but unfortunately you have to dig for it.
And that fund can vary, or does vary, from council to council, so it's worth looking into what's available in your area. Dan, I mentioned at the beginning of the programme that you're a carer as well for your daughter.
Yes.
Now, having a child with a disability can be hugely life-changing. It can change your finances completely. What kind of support is there then for parents and other carers?
With carers, unfortunately, it's a very much of a myriad of issues there, because obviously there are so many unpaid carers because they do not meet the criteria to qualify for carer's allowance. And many carers we are finding are unfortunately not applying for carer's allowance because there is still at the minute the ongoing thing of carer-related debt, where the government is trying to claw back debt from carers who, for some reason, found themselves in receipt of too much money. But I would say for a carer that you really have to seek support when you can get it. Do apply for whatever benefits you can. There are more than carer's allowance on the gov.org website that unfortunately do not come to mind at the minute, but you have to search for them. But as small as carer's allowance is, it's worth applying for because it can help you out.
Yes, and there is an ongoing review, isn't there, into
yes.
Into those carers' allowance overpayments, which I'm sure we'll be covering here on Moneybox and Moneybox Live in the future.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Hello, I'm Robin Ince.
And I'm Brian Cox, and we would like to tell you about the new series of The Infinite Monkey Cage. We're going to have a planet off.
Jupiter versus Saturn!
That was very well done, that, because in the script it does say wrestling voice.
After all of that, it's going to kind of chill out a bit and talk about ice.
And also in this series we're discussing history of music, recording with Brian Eno, and looking at nature's shapes.
So, listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Nature. We've had several parents contacting us about accessing child trust funds. Now, we've covered issues with these accounts on Moneybox before. These are tax-free savings accounts that were given to all children born between September 2002 and January 2011. Now, they received up to £500 in government vouchers each, and the idea was families would pay in more over the years and there'd be a nest egg for that child once they reached 18 and they could access the money. But as some children with learning disabilities reached adulthood, they've been running into real difficulties. Let's talk to Ramandeep next. Ramandeep, thanks for joining us on Moneybox Live.
Hi, Felicity.
Hello. Now, you actually got in touch with us because of your son, Harry. Tell me about your situation.
So I'm a parent to three teenage boys, and my middle son, Harry, has a condition, Down syndrome. So he has learning disabilities. All three of them had the initial Child Trust Fund vouchers, and I decided I would put them in a trust fund and save a regular amount over the years, and I've done that for all three of the boys. My eldest, as soon as he turned 18, was able to go to his provider and withdraw a lump sum. He had about £9,000, I think.
Pretty good at 18.
Yeah, it was pretty good, and he hasn't spent it all yet, so that's good.
That is good.
But for Harry, the issue has been that he turns 18 in a couple of months' time, and I was told that because of his mental capacity that he wouldn't be able to access his child trust fund and that I would have to go to the Court of Protection.
Okay, now Harry has £8,000, I believe, in his account. What's he like? How would he like to use that money?
Well, Harry absolutely loves electronics. So he has his iPad. He loves getting new headphones and headsets, stereo systems, whatever. So I think he would possibly spend it on that. He's also a keen Bollywood dancer, and he loves getting tailor-made outfits for his dancing. So I think a substantial chunk would go towards that.
Brilliant. But you've got this difficulty accessing that cash so that he can spend it. I mean, you talked about the court of protection. What would you need to do you know, to get this money?
Well, we'd have to apply to the court of protection. It's not a simple process. I think there's about 90 pages of forms that you have to fill in. You have to go and ask your GP to do their mental capacity assessment. There are fees involved in all of this. And it just feels like another level of bureaucracy that, you know, as a parent carer, we're so used to this. And it would be really nice if we could just have a simple system in place where my son could actually just access his money.
And Ramandeep, presumably you saved this money. You put this money away throughout Harry's childhood.
Yes. So I think what really infuriates me is I'm having to go to court to access my money. So it's money that I put in. Mm. It's money that his grandparents put in on birthdays and also that his father contributed to as well. So I just feel slightly put out that I'm having to go through this, or well, consider this very long-winded process just to access money that we put away.
And as a mother of three teenage sons, I mean, you have your hands full as it is, don't you?
Yes.
Ramandeep, thank you so much for joining us and telling us about your experiences. And I hope Harry has a fantastic birthday when it does come round. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you. The Ministry of Justice told us we've digitised the application process and created a step-by-step guide to help parents through a system that exists to protect funds from fraud and abuse. But Sarah, listening to Ramandeep's frustration, is there anything people can do to reduce the costs, to avoid paying the fees, to kind of go through that court of protection route?
Well, it is a really common problem when your child doesn't have the mental capacity themselves. So the good news is, there is one piece of good news, and that is if you apply before the child is 18, unless you've got really significant assets, then you don't actually have to pay the fees. Because this has been rumbling on for quite a long time, this issue. So the government has also said that, a few years ago, that parents or guardians can actually ask for those court fees to be waived even after the age of 18 if it's just the child trust fund that they're getting access to. So it's kind of, you know, it doesn't take anything away from the fact that the process is complicated and there are delays in it as well. The government's kind of promised it's going to work with the court of protection in order to try and sort of streamline things, make it a bit easier. But that's just no help at the moment for people who face the system as it is. And it does mean that, yes, unfortunately, you have to go through the process. I would also add that, you know, if you're obviously, you know, some people will need to apply for it anyway, for deputyship for children.
Yes.
And they once you've done it, gone through the process, that's not the end of it. Because you have this responsibility and because it's about kind of safeguarding the child, it also means you have to do annual reports, you have to do annual fees as well. You know, if you're just doing very, very simplistic finances, then actually that annual fee is about £35. So it's not the end of the world, but it's still yet another thing you've got to think about.
It is. But it is worth also talking to your bank or your investment provider about this before your child reaches 18 or even once they have, and see if they can help you there.
Absolutely. And the other definitely thing to say, you know, if you've got a child trust fund or a junior ISA and you're in this position, contact us, because some of them will have systems in place. So if you've got a certain, you know, not a vast sum of cash in there, they will do a sort of minimum amount. They will pay it straight to you. They'll say, don't worry about it. We'll take on the risk. You can have the money without all of this.
That's good to know. OK, well, let's hear from Ishmael next. He's an ambassador for the charity MenCap, which supports people like him who have learning disabilities. And he spoke to me earlier about his experiences navigating financial products like mortgages and banking.
So I have a firm family, have my own home, pay a mortgage, yes, and I pay all my bills. It can be quite challenging, especially when you're talking to companies and trying to get the right choice.
So do you find it challenging dealing with financial services companies like banks, or, you know, dealing with your energy company, that kind of thing?
Yeah, any company really, banks to energy providers or a mobile provider, anything really, any service. I'm quite good in the way of speaking out and trying to ask for help.
What are the challenges? What do you find hard?
Mainly is communication, when they're speaking very quickly or whether they are speaking very inaccessible language and when he's using a lot of jargon words.
What could they do that would make it easier for you?
What is helpful is that they're taking their time and also making sure they have the interest of the customers, making sure the customer actually understands. I feel that they can change the language of making it very simpler, that everyone understands.
And that would help everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. How can they adapt their ways of communicating or adapt their ways of providing the information?
If you need help kind of making some of those budgeting decisions, where can you turn? Who can you ask for a bit of a kind of helping hand?
I just look at it. I have my own sort of like a spreadsheet thing to see what things should be paid. For example, council tax, mortgage, anything that's really important.
We love a spreadsheet here at Moneybox Live. That's that's our favourite answer. I wanted to ask you about how much things are changing at the moment. So, you know, we make more payments digitally. We're expected to use contactless. Mm-hmm. There are QR codes. Have you been able to manage with that kind of changing way we're expected to spend?
Some people just like digital. Some people might like just cash. Or some people like myself, like both.
Ishmael, what do you want people to know about managing your finances as an independent adult who does have a learning disability?
First thing first, never rush anything. Once you sign up with a contract, you're actually stuck there. I have actually experienced it before, and I've learned a lesson in the way of making sure reading and not rushing yourself.
Thank you so much, Ishmael, for taking the time to talk to me. And I think what really stood out for me is that a lot of what he would like help with would actually make banking easier for everybody. Dan, what can banks and energy companies and all the other companies we pay do to be more inclusive of adults with learning disabilities?
I think there needs to be a complete readdress of actually the way they work. There needs to be mandatory inclusive training, obviously, because people access information, as the gentleman said, in so many different ways. If it's, things need to be available in easy read format, things need to be done in order to help visually impaired people or people who are deaf, if you see what I mean. There's so much people could do. These organisations could do so much by investing in differing ways of communication to help the process much more easier and people not to feel so rushed.
Well, UK Finance, which speaks for the banks, told us, we work with various organisations in order to help improve accessibility. The industry is also committed to preserving access to cash for people who need it. And it suggested that customers contact their bank and discuss their needs. Sarah, Ishmael has a mortgage, he manages his bills, he has an overdraft. Can having a disability and using benefits for part of your income have an impact on things like mortgage and loan applications?
Yes. So, I mean, fundamentally, it's illegal to turn someone down on the basis of disability, but it does then mean that you've got to meet standard criteria. And if your benefits are making up a big part of your income or, you know, significant part of your income, then there are some banks who won't take that into account when they're working out affordability because they're concerned that, for example, benefits could be cut or might not keep up with inflation. So it can be a bit of an issue. I think one of the things it might be worth doing is talking to a broker, because brokers will be able to find those specialist lenders who do take benefits into account and will consider you for a mortgage.
And Dan, in a word, where can people access help? Where can they seek out some advice if they need it?
Like I keep saying, I keep banging their trumpet, they're probably going to give me a job. But I would say people like Citizens Advice, Disability Law Service, Disability Rights UK, turn to us, anyone like that, local councils, just please source information where you can.
That is all we've got time for in today's Moneybox Live podcast. Thank you to everybody who took part and thanks to everyone who messaged or emailed. We only managed to get through a few, but we will come back to this topic again. Thank you as well to our panel. We've been hearing from Dan White from Disability Rights UK and Sarah Coles from Hargreaves Lansdowne. You can catch Paul Lewis with the Moneybox podcast on Saturday afternoon. He'll be answering listener questions about having to pay tax on the interest you make on your savings. If you have a question or another financial story you would like us to look at, please do get in touch. You can email moneybox@bbc.co.uk. You can also send us a voice note or comment on WhatsApp. The number is 03306 783 183. In this podcast, the producer was Sarah Rogers, the studio manager, Amy Gallagher, production coordinator, Ema Devlin. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Felicity Hannah, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds.
There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As President Trump returns to the White House, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems. The Coming Storm from BBC Radio 4. Listen on BBC Sounds.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
Hello, I'm Robin Ince.
And I'm Brian Cox, and we would like to tell you about the new series of The Infinite Monkey Cage. We're going to have a planet off.
Jupiter versus Saturn!
It was very well done, that, because in the script it does say wrestling voice.
After all of that, it's going to kind of chill out a bit and talk about ice.
And also in this series we're discussing history of music, recording with Brian Eno, and looking at nature's shapes.
So, listen wherever you get your podcasts.